Strengthen your immune system with Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C and get 10% off. Quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Hello and welcome to the Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robert Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity helping people with cancer to learn about and access integrative medicine. My guest on this week's show is Jane McClelland, author of the popular book How to Starve Cancer, and herself a long-term survivor of terminal cancer. If you don't know of Jane and her work, there are some aspects of today's show that you won't initially understand. So if you want to find out more, then I suggest you go to yestolife.org.uk, click the link on the homepage to the radio show, and search for Jane by name. This will bring up her earlier interviews that will cover a lot more of the groundwork. Also, of course, there's Jane's own website, howtostarvecancer.com. Meanwhile, this interview is going to look into the latest developments in Jane's thinking. I'm speaking to Jane over the internet at her home in West London. Hi, Jane. Welcome back to the Yes Live Show.
Hi, Robin.
It's always a pleasure to chat. So today's chat is an opportunity to get up to speed on your latest thinking all about a process called ferroptosis. Up until now, all your focus has been on the starvation of cancer by a variety of means, and you've certainly had some considerable success in raising the profile of this approach. I think you've got well over 40,000 members on your Facebook group at this point, haven't you?
Yes.
So, but... Now you're introducing something quite different. What's made you decide to do this?
Well, it's another way of you have to starve the cancer, but this time you're starving it of an amino acid called cysteine. You may have heard of N-acetylcysteine.
I have.
That's commonly used by a lot of people for sort of detox and to sort of help themselves, and it's a sort of cellular protection, but it also helps protect the cancer cell from being killed. And it stops the kill phase because it helps to create the master antioxidant, which is glutathione. I'm sure you've heard of glutathione. Mm-hmm. The combination of cysteine and glutamate creates glutathione. And glutathione is kind of like the cellular protector, but again, it is the major protector for stopping a kill phase. So in order to create the kill phase, you need to stop the import of cysteine, which is the cancer bringing in more of that amino acid to produce the glutathione. It's kind of like a chain of events, but it's actually trying to stop that process from stopping the cancer cell from protecting itself from radiotherapy, chemotherapy. But also the process of ferroptosis is specific. It's another form of cell death. So it's not the same as apoptosis, which I'm sure you know is just cell suicide, which is kind of like the cell shrinking and disappearing. But the way that ferroptosis works is this affects the fatty membranes of the cell, of the cancer cell, but not just the outside fatty membrane. It actually affects the membranes of the mitochondria as well. So this creates an oxidation or a rusting, if you like, of the fatty membranes. And because it's affecting the mitochondria membranes as well, because they're made of fat, then you get a breakdown of the mitochondria, which are then unable to make the energy. So again, it's kind of starving cancer, but it's doing it in a slightly different way. So you're starving it of cysteine and you're starving it of the ATP it needs to sort of produce all its daughter cells. So it's a different, it's a kind of a same thing, same theme of, you know, starving cancer, but this is a new approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but what actually prompted you to want to look at a new approach? Was it because you felt something additional was needed, or just because you stumbled across it and you thought, wow, this is amazing? What was it that prompted
both, it? Both, actually. It was while I was doing my online course that when I was doing my kill phase module, And the more I looked into ferroptosis, the more I thought, wow, this really is going to help those really aggressive cancers that are just almost impossible to cure, like the GBM, the triple negative breast cancer, some of the really aggressive ovarians. They are really, the more aggressive they are, the more they hog iron and they use iron for growth. And this is using iron. Ferroptosis literally means death by iron. Mm. So you are using this approach to actually kill off those really aggressive cancer cells by its own, you know, hoisted by its own petard. You're kind of using its own vulnerability to actually kill it off. So it's quite a neat and elegant way to actually do it.
Okay, good. So, but in terms of cancer research, ferroptosis is what you call relatively new, which means only about 10 years. Things don't move very fast in this field. So it seems to me that there's actually is quite a bit of research, but pretty much no action. Is that about to sum it up?
No, that's exactly right. There's only a handful of doctors that I know of at the moment who are actually doing anything like this. And mostly it's not, you know, it's not the full version. I've got kind of like, I've researched to the nth degree. I've got about 20 different salvage pathways that cancer will use in order to get round being treated by ferroptosis. So if you just block the import of cysteine, or you block something called the GPX4, which is an enzyme that the cancer uses to repair its fatty membranes, it can get round those in many, many different ways. So what I've done is a bit like my Metro map, where it has these escape routes. So if you can't get to it one route, you know, you'll kill it by blocking another route, and you have to work out what those routes are. And I've kind of worked through all the escape routes that cancer uses to escape death by ferroptosis in order to provide a sort of a synergistic protocol that includes not just drugs, and these are off-label drugs like sulfasalazine, but key supplements, and also a special diet as well, which is again different to what I normally say, because this one is actually a methionine-free diet, which is different to starving it. So I kind of encourage people to do a starve phase for a month and then look at doing a kill phase for maybe a month. They may only want to do it for a few days. It's entirely up to them, or down to their doctor to decide whether they need a more intense kill phase. And the more aggressive your cancer is, probably the more intense a kill phase you need. So if it's only, you know, growing very slowly, you can maybe just do a kill phase, which is only a few days. But if it's very aggressive, you might want to do the full month of a kill phase, and then you do a month of the starve. So you alternate between the two. And I think that fits very well with the care oncology protocol, because they do a month alternating between mebendazole, which is an antiparasitic drug, and they do a month on doxycycline. That's normally what they do with it. It varies a little bit with patients, but that is their standard protocol. Statins, by the way, are particularly useful for ferroptosis, but we'll come to that in a minute. But the point is that you can actually alternate the mebendazole and the doxycycline and actually do the ferroptosis while you're doing the mebendazole phase, because that is synergistic with ferroptosis. So disturbing, because that upsets the microtubules in the cell. So, and that can actually really assist.
Okay, so you said this is particularly valuable to people who've got aggressive cancers, and you think it's maybe it's a very
particularly,
good...
Yeah, it does work for other cancers as well. So it doesn't have to be a really aggressive cancer. It can be a much slower growth. But you'll get much more pronounced results. Actually, that's the exciting thing. The more aggressive it is, the more you'll see results. I'm already seeing people doing modified versions of it, getting tremendous results already. So I'm really excited.
Okay. So you stress the importance of distinct kill and starve phases. And as you say, they've got completely different requirements, these two. And so this is a new piece of learning for some people who may have got their head around the Metro map. This is Metro Map 2, I take it.
I probably need to create another diagram to make things a little bit easier. I haven't done that in my book, and I think I will for my online course. I will do maybe another video on this just to help people get their heads around it. But it does involve blocking. So antioxidants are not what you want. You actually want oxidants. This is very much an oxidation process. And there are some antioxidants that put the blockers on ferroptosis. So you need to avoid vitamin E, for example. And vitamin E comes in all sorts of different forms. Even the gamma tocotrienols probably need to be avoided. But alpha tocopherol in particular needs to be avoided. And CoQ10, which is a very powerful antioxidant, needs to be avoided. A lot of people don't get that. And this is where statins come in, because they deplete your CoQ10. So it makes your cancer vulnerable to ferroptosis. It's kind of like really neat that it fits in with the care oncology protocol. It's ideal. So it fits in. Once you've starved, you can starve your cancer, prepare yourself for ferroptosis by reducing your CoQ10 and make it much more vulnerable. You then go boom for a ferroptosis phase. And that's hopefully going to do the trick.
Okay.
So fingers crossed.
Right. Okay. Let's just talk about the sort of, you know, there's a massive list of things that you talk about in relation to ferroptosis. But in amongst that, I assume there's some kind of basic ingredients. You're going to need something that does this and something that does this and something that does this. Can you tell me what those different approaches that are needed, which all together make up what you call a kill phase?
Okay. All right. So you need to start with, you need to block this XCT antiporter. Now that pulls in the cysteine, that that amino acid that creates the glutathione. You need to block that. Okay. So one of the key things you can use to block that is the drug sulfasalazine. There are supplements that can help that as well. There's one called piperlongumine, which comes from long pepper. Mm-hmm. So that's a supplement you can use. There's also a supplement called sodium selenite. Now, it can't be selenium. It's a type of selenium, but it's a specific one, because actually selenium is an antioxidant and you don't want that. Sodium selenite is actually a slightly different selenium-based compound, but that will actually help block the XCT antiporter as well. So that's really key. And then blocking the GPX4, which is this enzyme, glutathione peroxidase is its full name, but that enzyme will help to repair these lipid, those fatty membranes, and you actually want to stop that happening. And some of the things that will actually help stop that, you've got Danshen, which is a Chinese herbal supplement. You've also got something called PEITC, and that is a that's something that you can find in watercress. So that's really useful. And then you've got some other things like artesunate that will also help. So there are lots of and dihydroartemisinin as well. So that is something that you get from, that's also a supplement, but that also creates oxidation as well. And oxidation is what we really want. And the combination of the oxidation with maybe intravenous vitamin C, because that provides hydrogen peroxide, bingo, you then get this complementary effect where they're all working synergistically to create this ferroptosis. It's a really neat, and those are the really key things. So artemisinin, the hydrogen peroxide from intravenous vitamin C, and some of these other supplements, you know, and you need to block certain antioxidant pathways as well, like the NRF2, the NRF2, and taking fenugreek, for example, is really useful for that as well. So those are kind of some of the key things to take.
Going back to MetroMAT1, I mean, basically you're trying to get over cancer's ability to find a new way of surviving by going around the back.
Yeah.
And therefore you're trying to block off all its options at once.
Correct. And okay. It's actually a whole new, some of the things I've put in this protocol are things that nobody would have heard of before, such as Roscoe Genin, which is part of Butcher's Broom. And then you've got lactoferrin and things like that. But you also need specific fats as well. So instead of having olive oil, which contains oleic acid, you actually need to have flaxseed and walnut seed oil, or you need to have what else? These fish oils, but DHA in particular, really useful for triggering ferroptosis. But again, you've got to be very careful. They're not with vitamin E. Very often you get these fish oil supplements and they contain tocopherols as kind of part of their antioxidant, which means that they won't work. You've actually got to have fish oils that don't have vitamin E. And probably the best ones are cod liver oil, actually, because they contain vitamin A and D rather than vitamin E. So that's, so it's a completely different approach. And even the diet has got to be different as well.
So it, what it puts me in mind of is the fact that one of the virtues, it seems, of integrative medicine, particularly with aggressive cancers, is that a lot of the methods that have come, their roots are in complementary and alternative medicine, are quite good at controlling cancers over a long period in a way that orthodox medicine's not so good. But with an aggressive cancer, actually you need a kill phase, because actually there's not enough oomph there to deal with the momentum that the cancer has. It just simply is running away. And so the combination of the two can be particularly powerful, because you can use the orthodox medicine for the kill phase, and you can use the complementary alternative medicine to then give some sustained relief from cancer to hold it at bay. And it seems you've got a plan which is rather like that. Is that fair?
I would say it is, because what they're trying to do is, but they are focused very much on just the fast dividing cell with chemo and radiotherapy. So those are kill phases, because they actually do produce oxidation and free radicals, but they are not attacking the cancer stem cell. And actually this is where ferroptosis is even better, because this is actually getting the cancer stem cell at the same time as well. Because that's the key, that the stem cell is always left behind with chemo and radiotherapy. It doesn't touch that, because you really need to block some of these key pathways in which it feeds itself in order to get rid of the cancer stem cell. And ferroptosis does that. So in terms of a treatment option, I think the ferroptosis is head and shoulders above chemo and radiotherapy. But having said that, there are some chemotherapies which do assist ferroptosis. So cisplatin, for example, will actually help block the XCT antiporter. So it does actually have this effect of assisting ferroptosis. So if you're already on cisplatin, hurrah for that, because you can then add some of these ferroptosis treatments in, and you'll make it far more effective. And in fact, methotrexate also has some effects on ferroptosis. So both of those two will actually help. You can actually make them far more effective just by adding some of these other supplements. And if you can, you can add sulfasalazine. You know, if you, the problem with sulfasalazine, it's an old rheumatoid arthritis drug, been used for decades. But it can cause some hemolytic anemia if you're not careful. So you need to have it monitored. I mean, there are rheumatoid patients who take it regularly, long term. But, you know, it does need to be monitored. But you could also pulse it in a short phase. If you're just doing ferroptosis for, say, a month, you just have it for that month, and then you go back to your starve phase. So you're not constantly on it, or you could maybe just do a fortnight. It really depends on how aggressive your cancer is. So this is a way to really enhance what is available already and to make it much more effective. So I'm really excited by it. It's not, again, it's something that's complementary to traditional medicine. I'm not trying to say that you should just do one or the other. It's always a combination. So you need to get that fast dividing cell. You need to get the stem cell at the same time. And it's always doing both options together that will get rid of those fast dividing, more aggressive cells, but also get the stem cells at the same time.
And you know, we said earlier on that there's quite a bit of research behind ferroptosis, but no action. Why do you think that is? Why is nobody picking it up and saying, hey, this looks interesting, we should try it out?
Because they haven't got really expensive patented drugs for it. You know, we're looking at, again, we're looking at old drugs, which, you know, don't cost an awful lot of money. And the push to get this out into the clinic just isn't there because, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is not pushing it. So we've, again, got this block of just getting the information down to the patient to say, hey, look at this. This is really exciting. And I'm seriously excited by this, so, you know.
I'm just interested that as a process, though, ferroptosis, I mean, you know, you could say, well, immunotherapy a few years ago was of no interest at all to pharmaceutical companies. They were, you know, there were people doing immunotherapy in Germany and all the rest of it for many, many, many years, and no hint of interest from pharmaceuticals until they found a way of, oh, yeah, well, we could actually make drugs to do this, you know, very expensive ones, in fact. Is there no case for ferroptosis being a process that new drugs can target more effectively, maybe, or more simply?
Yes. In fact, immunotherapy is much more effective if you use ferroptosis at the same time. So the PD-L1 inhibitors, for example, are far more effective if you do ferroptosis at the same time, because part of the way they work is to create interferon gamma. And interferon gamma actually is synergistic with ferroptosis. In fact, you could probably just use interferon gamma on its own and not need the PD-L1 inhibitors in order to create ferroptosis. It's just a much easier way if you could get it. They used to use it as a treatment, but they found it wasn't effective enough on its own. So they've kind of dropped it and they've gone towards these PD-L1 inhibitors. But we need to go back to looking at some of these older drugs and use those synergistically together. I think it's really exciting. Again, stop using that word exciting, Jane. I'm just excited.
But all old drugs there, and you're not going to get much excitement out there around old drugs, unfortunately, as we know. Okay, so I just wanted to just have a quick look at the fact, I mean, one of the things that's kind of unusual about your work, what you've written about, is how agnostic it is in terms of substances to induce effects. I mean, most people are usually in the camp of drugs or natural compounds, but you really give them fairly equal status, and it's down to, well, how well do they work and what are the side effects like if you've got two.
Exactly.
So actually, your reason for choosing a natural substance over a drug would be a balance between how effective it is and how bad the side effects are of the drug. Would that be right?
That would be correct. And, you know, you look at a supplement called piperlongumin, which I mentioned earlier, from long pepper, at blocking the XCT antiporter. You can see it has huge effects. There's a one of the articles I've cited in my text is one where it's stopping the import of cysteine for pancreatic cancer, and it is hugely successful for that cancer. You know, so that's how important it is. And we know that sulfasalazine, I have patients who have been taking sulfasalazine because I did mention it in my first edition. It's just my approach and how it works is so much more expanded now. I can understand it in a much bigger and more thorough way. But the piperlongumin as a supplement seems to be really, really important and can really assist this process. So it's, you know, I'm really keen that people do a combination of not just the drugs, but they actually use some of these supplements as well, which will mean they don't need as much of the drug in order to get the effect if they're also covering that with a supplement as well. So I'm trying to give people as many options as possible. Ultimately, it's about saving lives and actually getting people better. And it doesn't matter quite how you do that. If you've got the option to take the drugs, very often they're more effective. But if you haven't got that option, then, you know, at least you can do maybe a sort of a modified version of it and you'll still get effects with any luck. And I see that in some of the patients who I've talked to recently, that they are actually getting effects, even though they're not doing the full sulfasalazine, and they're not leflunomide is another drug that can kind of help as well. Again, it's another rheumatoid arthritis drug. But the combination of the, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to have all of those drugs in order to get it to work. Right. So
it's interesting. It's very different to the old days when it was like, well, there's this treatment or there's this one. You know, it's rather different than what you're talking about, because you've got a kind of shopping list of options. Lots of potential for varying things depending on what you're able to get your hands on, what you can tolerate, what happens to work with your current treatment you're having or whatever. So it's quite interesting from that point of view that it's not very, it's not a narrow approach at all.
No. And I mean, I do have quite a long list of supplements as well in there. But having said that, you know, what I'm trying to do at the moment is talk to some formulation companies to help me put together some combination supplements can just have one pill instead of four.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what sense. I'm hoping for, so that I can just make it far easier for people to do this. Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
Yeah. OK, well, look, the thing we haven't mentioned yet, for the people who are waiting to get their hands on this information, is that actually you've written about all this ferroptosis and you're about to launch a new edition of your book with additional material, correct? Do you want to just tell us quickly what they're going to get?
Yes. So there's about an extra 80 pages. I do have an index this time. I know a lot of people have left me a one-star review for not having an index, which I think is incredibly mean. But anyway, so this will have it will have an index, and I will be talking about, I'm afraid I've put a few more of these fuel pipelines into my metro map. For example, the XCT antiporter, which is key to ferroptosis, is also part of the staff protocol, so it kind of neatly flows from one thing to the other. But I've also got lactate inhibitors. So this is lactate always used to be thought of as just a sort of a byproduct or a waste product of glycolysis, you know, the abnormal fermentation of cancer. But actually lactate is also a fuel. So it gets taken up by neighbouring cells and then taken up and then converted into something called pyruvate, which then goes into your OXPHOS pathway. So it's another way of the cancer getting fuel. So you need to block that lactate transport. So that's on there. Fat transport as well. Fat is becoming, you know, again, with ferroptosis, much more important in the whole concept of sort of disrupting the fat and oxidizing the fat, but also stopping the uptake of bad fat is really key. And in fact, they've recently, you know, been discussing it in the research, although I've already written about it. But the CD36, it's also mentioned in my online course, blocking the CD36, which is a fat transporter, is really important. You can do that very easily with a supplement called Dan Shen, which, again, it really helps ferroptosis. It's one of the key things you need. It helps block the enzyme. So that GPX4 enzyme. So it all fits together. The whole thing kind of smoothly, well, it should be smooth, but, you know, I'm just hoping people aren't too confused by this, because, you know, it's more of the same. It's much more in depth, if you know what I mean. I'm talking about nuclear factor kappa beta, I'm talking about STAT3 as well. These are kind of like central nodes that sort of happen before you get the abnormal metabolism. And blocking both of those two pathways, the nuclear factor kappa beta and the STAT3, are kind of key with every cancer. And I focus a little bit more on that in my next book as well. So it's kind of more in depth, a few more pathways, not many, but a few more key pathways, which I think will help people get much better results. I'm really, you know, keen that people educate themselves and learn about it. It's complicated up to a point, but then you can just look at it in a very basic way and say, I need to block glucose, I need to block some of those amino acids, which is the protein, and I need to block some of that fat. I do talk about it. It's much simpler, I guess, in my online course, because I've got more diagrams. And I talk about it in a shortened version, which I think people prefer, the little short videos on each subject. So that makes it easier for people if they don't want to buy the book. All of this information will be in the online course, but I talk about it in more depth in the book. So probably they're symbiotic. You know, you just have a combination of the book and the course will probably help.
Okay, the book has a different title, the same title?
It's got a different subtitle. So it's How to Starve Cancer and Then Kill It with Ferroptosis.
Okay.
So it's effectively you starve it, do that for a month, and then you kill it when it's weak. Because weakening it with starving, the starve process is really quite a key approach anyway. And you also, like I said, with the statins, you're blocking the CoQ10, which is that key antioxidant that will stop ferroptosis from working.
And when's it going to be available?
Towards the end of July. We've had a few hiccups with the printing, but probably about the, it's slightly delayed. So about the 25th of July now. It was going to be 16th of July.
Okay. So, and now I just want to go on and talk a little bit about this happening in practice. You mentioned that there's a chap called Dr. El Saka doing some pioneering work in Egypt.
Yes.
He seems to be deeply immersed in this stuff. What kind of success is he having?
He's having fantastic success. I can't give you any patient histories directly, but what I will do is maybe try and get him to talk to me, and I can then relay those on in blogs and talk about some of those things. Maybe get him to do a little video for my online course as well. That might be useful.
But he's one of a handful of people there around the world, isn't he, who's actually doing this stuff?
He's delved into it very deeply, and I'd say more deeply than anybody else. I learned from him. He's learned from me because I found some other pathways that he didn't know about. I've really dug very deeply too. So I think the combination of his knowledge and my knowledge and both our research has sort of ended up with a far more in-depth approach to how to make this work. So I'm really hoping this could be the answer for triple negative cancers, for the glioblastomas, for the pancreatic cancers, you know, the really, really tricky ones. Hard to and treat. Even things like rhabdomyosarcoma and
But that amongst those handful of practitioners, unfortunately, none of them happens to be in the UK, I believe.
No, they're not. No.
That's
having
good,
said that, I'm talking to the Anti-Cancer Drug Fund. You know, maybe I can get a trial off the ground. That's what I'm hoping for. But otherwise, you know, I'm looking for doctors who I can work with. I mean, I'd love to have my own clinic. That's what I'd really love, is to have a clinic where we can deliver ferroptosis and maybe several of these clinics. That's what I'd really hope for, because I really feel this is the future. And it's about getting it right. You know, you have to do, there are certain parameters which will make it easier to, you know, for the ferroptosis to work. So you have to check the iron levels. You know, there are various things that you need to check. The homocysteine levels are important as well, because homocysteine can provide cysteine, which again is that sort of antioxidant that you don't want. So homocysteine needs to be correct. You know, there are a whole load of things that will need to be checked by a doctor in order to make a really effective protocol. And I just wish, in a way, my book is probably directed, it's not just for patients, but it's for patients to actually give to their doctors and say, look, I don't understand it. Can you look into this a bit more? And, you know, if they don't understand it, go to my online course and hopefully they'll maybe understand it a little better. But it is all about blocking the antiporter, blocking the cysteine, and then creating oxidation of those fatty membranes. And that's really the key.
So we have, 40,000 plus people out there who are struggling to get to grips with all this for themselves. And in one way, it's a great thing, because this is an opportunity being offered to them they didn't have before. And many of them are amazingly grateful for that, I know. In another way, it's not ideal that so many people are having to get to grips with immense complexity. In fact, I mean, I know you've got the right brain for this quite clearly. You are quite naturally drawn to find out this stuff, you know, for initially for your own survival. But, you know, even some people wouldn't even do it for that. They couldn't. It wouldn't work for them.
No.
So ideally, this is the territory of experienced expert practitioners. And so this has to be the aim, is to sort of get some people up to speed who are already in the right territory, already have the whole background of understanding. And this is just a new part of the puzzle they're going to put in there in order to take that further step. We have to hope that there are practitioners who are going to be, you know, have this.
Yes, and I can train them up. Ahmed will come over. We can create a training program for people. There's absolutely no problem with that. But I just need to have somewhere, you know, I'd like to have a clinic where I can train a doctor to do this.
Mm. Ahmed is Dr. El-Saka.
So he can come over and he'd be very happy to help me train somebody up in how we do this. So we'd work on that together.
Okay, interesting. One last thing from your new chapter I'd like to just touch in on. You discuss combining ferroptosis with a range of other techniques. You mentioned PDT, photodynamic therapy, magnetic therapy, which has always been majorly controversial, of course. HBOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is kind of fairly accepted these days in a lot of quarters, exercise and exercise with oxygen. You mentioned all of those. I'm just interested to hear why, you know, what are the synergies you're wanting to exploit with something like, well, first of all, just tell everybody who doesn't understand what photodynamic therapy is in very broad terms, and then why it's good in combination.
Okay, well, again, it's oxidation and it's creating oxidized reactions inside the cell. So it's actually totally synergistic because it's creating the oxygen for ferroptosis to occur. And you can take these photosensitizing drugs or supplements and you take them in about 48 hours, 24 to 48 hours, they've kind of settled in the cancer cells, they're taken up by those cells, and then you fire particular lights at the cancer cells, and this will actually create these oxygen-free radicals, which will then kill the cancer cells specifically. And this has been used in some traditional quarters. I think one is it UCL that has a center,
National Medical Center.
Yeah, so you know it's around, it's available from a few places. And, you know, more traditional, they use it now for melanoma a little bit more than they used to.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is thought of as a conventional treatment just about, but they just don't use it, that's all. The people who developed it have realised they've managed to get the technology so cheap and effective that it's far too cheap for our market here. Yeah. And so they take it to third world countries and they can set them up for £8,000 with the equipment, £200 a time to treat cancer. So it's a great treatment, but you're actually saying that ferroptosis is a great add-on.
I want that in my clinic.
Yeah, right. But you could look at this the other way around and you could say that ferroptosis was a great add-on to PDT. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All synergistic.
Right. And how about...
It's all about oxidation because cancer hates oxygen.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a good basic. And of course, so three of these, which is hyperbaric oxygen, exercise and exercise with oxygen, all are in the same territory, directly talking about oxygen there. Come on. What about magnetic therapy that, as I say, causes
that's
lots
of... That's slightly different.
Hoo-ha.
That's because iron, we're talking about something called the VDAC channel. And we are effectively just a sort of an electrical load of channels all the time. That's what we are. And the cancer, if you can affect this VDAC channel with the magnetic, well, it's radio frequencies of particular frequencies that seem to be more effective. So the magnetic therapy on its own isn't necessarily the thing to do, but you've got these machines called Optune machines, which are now used for glioblastoma and Beamer mats. I think those may be possibly useful. I mean, there's still a query over, you know, just how useful they are. But this can actually affect the electrical impulses. And the VDAC channel is part of, you know, it's something that occurs with ferroptosis as you get this exchange, this opening of this channel. And all these electrical stimulations can actually help with that. So it's just another assistance to that.
Interesting. Okay. Well, look, one last thing I have to just ask is just personal interest, this is, right? So I'm quite aware of food quality, which in itself you actually got to know quite a bit to differentiate between something that looks good and something that actually is good these days. It's not a simple matter to go out and get good food. But I leave all the processes, my body, the ways it puts this food to use, I just trust that it's going to do a great job with it, or I never give it a second thought. I'm interested to know what it's like from your point of view of being aware of the immense complexities involved in assimilating this food and utilizing it for all the processes that we've been talking about, along with plenty of others.
Yeah, well, it is a complex situation. And again, I'm talking about this different diet when you're talking about ferroptosis. So you have a methionine-free, which is actually essentially a vegan diet. And so, but, you know, a lot of people are doing vegan diets anyway when they are diagnosed with cancer. And I think that is, in many cases, particularly with the aggressive ones, that's kind of the way to go. But it is very hard to assimilate all the different aspects of it. And you do have to put an awful lot of trust in your own process and knowledge of what you learn. But I mean, you know, there are a lot of foods that you can eat quite happily, which you know are going to do you good, like mushrooms, or, you know, mushrooms are particularly good. You don't necessarily have to complete. The whole point is that with my approach is that you're not starving yourself. These supplements, the approach that I take is that you can do all these other things alongside, and hopefully you don't need to be going down the extreme route of starving yourself in order to stop the cancer getting the nutrients. The supplements and the drugs will actually do the job, and then you oxidize with exercise as well. So it is hard, and I know people struggle a lot with the ketogenic diet, and the ketogenic diet isn't necessarily absolutely required for ferroptosis. In fact, it may be slightly more detrimental actually for ferroptosis to be really strict on that. And we know that after 28 days, if you're just doing a ketogenic diet, after 28 days, it's at its weakest. But then by 90 days, it's learnt to sort of get round that and use these other food nutrients. Yeah. And that is research I came across whilst writing this chapter. So it's quite important to be looking at blocking more than just the glycolysis, which is kind of what everybody focuses on. Glucose is, you know, the whole focus, really. But we've moved from there to looking at blocking amino acids, particularly glutamine. And now we're looking at fat and looking at blocking cysteine, which I did discuss in my first book, obviously. But, you know, we've gone down a sort of a new pathway in order to make that far more effective.
And so just on a personal level, if you end up in a restaurant and you pick something off the menu,
I'm a nightmare.
Yeah, and they bring it round. Are you thinking to yourself of the effect that each of these things is going to be having on this pathway and that pathway? Does that actually run through your mind?
No, I'm much more, you know, I don't have active, I'm touching wood, because who knows, you know, I don't have active cancer right now. So I don't think like that. Although, you know, sometimes if I put a load of chili on my food, I'll think, oh, yeah, that's acting my AMPK.
I bet you do. That's why I ask. Anyway, all right.
But that you know, I'm far more relaxed these days than I used to be. Right. But yeah, I was fairly.
Okay. Well, we're going to leave it there. We're out of time. Just a quick reminder, the title of your new book?
How to Starve Cancer and Then Kill It with Ferroptosis.
Excellent.
Let's kill it.
Kill it towards the end of July. Thanks very much, Jane. Pleasure, as always, to have you on board.
Pleasure to talk to you, Robin.
Thanks very much,
nice
Jane.
Nice to talk to you.
I hope you found that interesting. Jane is certainly pushing the boundaries of the thinking behind cancer treatment with her work, and it'll be very interesting to see where it all leads. A reminder that Jane's website is howtostarvecancer.com. I'd like to put in a bit of a plug here for Yes to Life, the charity. It's seriously tough times for charities in terms of fundraising, and they're in more demand than ever. As a desperate response to the situation, I'm doing a 70th birthday ride from Land's End to the eastern tip of Kent, keeping off-road as far as possible on my e-mountain bike. This will be a 525-mile ride, 12 days in the saddle, and a total climb well over the height of Everest. What am I hoping to get out of such lunacy? Well, £25,000 for the charity. So, as you can imagine, I'm going to need your help to do it. All donations are hugely welcome to enable Yes to Life to keep flying the flag for integrative medicine and to keep supporting people with cancer. To sponsor me, go to the Yes to Life website. Again, that's yestolife.org.uk. Click the news item on the homepage headed Robin Senior Struggle, and this will take you to my Just Giving page. I'm well on the way to the first 10,000, but quite a way to go still, so please be generous. Make all that pain worthwhile. Thanks for listening today. I'll be back next week with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.